This is the Guitar Noise Podcast, episode 24. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Noise Podcast. In this episode, I talk to the amazingly talented Kaki King, who has just released her sixth album, Glow. Kaki is well known in the guitar community for her virtuosic skill on the acoustic guitar and often uses two-handed percussive techniques in her compositions. Kaki is about to embark on a month-long tour here in Australia, so I caught up with her to talk about the new album, Glow. Hi Kaki, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. First of all, congratulations on your new album, Glow.
Thank you.
I've been listening to it quite a lot recently as it was sent over to me, and really enjoyed it because I work with music on in the background, and it's one of those albums that sort of, you can have it sitting in the background, but then it just sort of occasionally there's something that happens that really piqued my interest. Different instrumentation and things that I sort of not used to hearing from some of your earlier albums that I've heard, basically. Were you trying to get away from the virtuosic acoustic guitar player sort of label?
The first couple records I did kind of did have that label. And the next three were really different, and they had a lot of guitar work and a lot of different, you know, I was trying a lot of different things. And, you know, the process of being a musician for as long as I've been is that, you know, I really understood what I do best and what I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And I also really, I think I was a bit unmoored and didn't really know where I wanted to go next. And you know, the good thing about the guitar is that it's this really self-limiting system. You know, I don't have endless choices. So it was easier to kind of confront, you know, a couple of different types of guitars and write an album from them. I will say from a guitar player, you know, from a technical standpoint that, I mean, the Fire Eater and Holding the Severed Self and Kelvinator are some of the most, that's some of the most difficult music I've ever written, you know. And so, you know, I will get the wrong label no matter what I do. You know, I'll get no one understands really what it is to do what I do unless they're doing it. And So I'm not really trying to fight any labels. I'm not reacting to anyone's statements about who I am or what I do. I just do what I do. I mean, you know, I'll be in the wrong pigeonhole no matter what. So that's okay. But, you know, I just think that if you really listen to the record there, and if you try as a guitar player to play some of that stuff, you know, it's pretty complicated. But I didn't write it complicated in order for, you know, to show off. I mean, I wrote it because that's how it just sounds really good.
It actually doesn't sound like you're trying to, like you were just saying, it's not written for the sake of being experimental or being virtuosic. It doesn't, I didn't think at any point during that album that I stopped to think, oh, that's just like an exercise or anything like that. I understand that it's very difficult to play the style of music that you play. But yeah, it seems to flow very, very nicely from one track to the next.
I'm glad you think that. You know, I think it's, I'm really, really pleased with it. I think it's a thing of great beauty.
I mean, it sounds like you've been experimenting a bit with different instruments as well. I mean, straight from the opening track, Great Ram Burn. Mm-hmm. Am I right in saying there's mandolins playing on that as well?
Nope. That is a Griffin guitar. It's made by a guy named Joe Viette in Woodstock, New York, incidentally.
Right.
So that guitar you hear on Great Round Burn and Fences and King Paizel. And what it is, you're right in that it sounds very similar to a mandolin, but it's a 12-string guitar. It's like a very small, high-strung 12-string.
Right.
And it is gorgeous. It is such a cool guitar. And it's almost like I just pick it up and it just writes music by itself. Like it's fascinating. And so that's what you hear, you know, it's this really special little guitar that I've been lucky enough to get to play.
It adds an amazing sound, actually. I thought on Fences, I was thinking it sounds like a 12-string, but I thought maybe you've got like it capoed really high or something. It was really, I was trying to work out how that range was so high.
Well, yeah, it is. And also the I'm not tuning, there's, even though there's, you know, six sets of note, there's just six notes. I've actually tuned two of the strings differently. So you're hearing eight notes, you know, at any given time.
Just to complicate things even more for yourself.
Yeah, just to throw it in there. No, it really makes it beautiful. You know, there's some suspensions in that, you know, in that set of tuning that I have. It really makes that song special.
And also in there was another track, Bowen Island, and that sort of has this Japanese-sounding instrument in it. Is that another one of these interesting creations that you've found along the way?
It's a plain old acoustic guitar, and what I've done is I've loosened the strings, and I take a false bridge, and I stick it underneath the strings, and I put it directly on top of the 16th fret. Huh. And on my guitar, what that does is creates a fifth between... So I now have like a left side and a right side of the guitar, like a koto would, like a Japanese koto.
Right.
And so I can pluck on one side and I can bend on the other. So the combination of it all being in fifths and also having that weird sound where I can, you know, I transcribe that, but, you know, sort of that Beijing opera kind of sound. It does create this very, it's very cool. I mean, I think that's one of the neatest little bits of engineering that I've been able to, you know, pull off.
Absolutely. You had me fooled. I thought it was an actual traditional Japanese instrument.
No, it's well, they're really expensive and I couldn't afford one. So I made one myself. It cost me a dollar.
That's excellent. That's a good tip. So, with the instrumentation on the album, was this all sort of clear in your head when you went into the studio, or did it sort of develop around your guitar parts once you were in there?
You know, I came in with like with some of the work hashed out, and some of it was totally new. I mean, the end track, March Slav, was just, I mean, I wrote it right then and there. And, I think it helps for me, if I have to spend a lot of time in the studio just getting the guitar part right, then it's going to be a pretty long, you know, it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I do come in as absolutely as well rehearsed as possible, because that means that, you know, instead of having all day to try to get a take on one song, I can, you know, record them in a relatively small amount of time and then, you know, work out whatever else needs to be worked out. So that was kind of, you know, so certain things did happen in the studio and certain things came. I mean, the you know, Fire Eater was like written during the time of the record. No, I mean, it's a little bit of both, but I do like to come in fairly well prepared so I don't have to pay as much money.
Yeah, fair enough. So there's some fun sounding tracks that something that sounds like it would be fun to play live, such as King Pizel and The Fire Eater. But which is your favorite track from the album to perform live?
You know, I like the ones that are challenging still are the ones I love. Fire Eater is definitely up there. I'm almost to the point where I nail the ending. Oddly enough, Kelvinator, that's just like I was doing an interview in France and I was saying, you know, that song is like this total, it's like a test of my mental and physical well-being. Like when I get to that song on stage, And I get through it, I can tell you, like, if I had a good meal that day, if I slept well the night before, like, if I talked to my wife on the phone, like, I sort of, like, I really know where I stand when I play that song. It's really, really challenging, and yet there's a lot of it where I have to really let go. You know, there's, like, such a sort of wild, wild freedom to it that I can't control every single, you know, it's a combination of some weird psycho stuff that, you know, but it's powerful. It really makes sense to me.
And does this use, I know you experiment with a lot of open tunings. Does that track use open tunings as well?
Yeah, that track, that's in open D minor, I think.
Okay. And do you have like a favorite open tuning that is your sort of go-to tuning for when you're writing, or do you just experiment and find different things when you change the tunings?
I mean, the problem is when you have, you know, you can't have a favorite for too long because, I don't know, the trick, the thing about open tunings is they just eventually start to sound like open tunings. You know, like it just, I have found it very difficult to write song after song after song in the same tuning. I mean, I've certainly leaned on some very, very, you know, there are some that are more versatile than others and some I've leaned on really heavily, but ultimately you're going to get stuck in a sort of similar sounding vein if you don't, you know, change it up.
Yeah.
So there's really, you know, the go-to situation is a bit of a dangerous area because really go-to means go to the place that's familiar, and that can just, you know, be not as creative as you should be.
As this is a guitar podcast, can we talk a little bit about your signature guitar from Ovation?
Sure.
It's the Kaki King 1581 KK, is that correct?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
When did you start working on an actual signature model, and what differences did this guitar have to a sort of a standard model?
The first time they made me a guitar, it was this kind of hilarious bright blue color, and I played around. I actually played a lot with it. It's a really, really good guitar. And, you know, a lot of the changes were a little cosmetic.
Yeah.
Ultimately landing on the black with no inlays, a little, you know, a little crown at the 12th fret as a nod to, you know, nod to my dad, really, because he's, you know, he's really the original king. And, you know, just cleaned up that epaulette with all the weird, you know, they had that weird leaf pattern on, which I couldn't ever stand. And, you know, and I made it symmetrical. And, you know, so that was just, you know, that was on the surface of it. I liked the black top, but I wanted it to be matte. And so they had this really cool thing they do. They basically paint this really thin glaze that it has like gold flake in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the top is still shiny, but it's not reflective. And I think that's very cool.
Okay.
You know, but then they did work on the preamp. You know, what all I wanted to do for years, I mean, for years, is get deeper and deeper tone. I mean, the deeper, the lower, the darker, the better. And they fine-tuned the preamp in that guitar to my specs. You know, I wanted the, like, deepest, loudest, sort of most powerful guitar that wasn't going to just, you know, split your ears with that, like, you know, really sharp acoustic sound.
Yeah.
So that's the feature that's kind of, you know, the hidden section that's the neatest part of it.
And you've always found that Ovation guitars sort of, they're more comfortable for you to play in your style?
You know, as far as the altered tunings and the very, very, it's a very, very live top. I mean, you have to have an Adamus model, which means that it's going to be a carbon fiber top.
Hmm.
And I mean, it's so reactive, those tops. And, you know, my dad had an Adamus when I was a kid, and I inherited that guitar. I made my first record with it and then started working with the company. And, you know, it's just been there for so long. But nothing can hold low tunings like those guitars, you know. That's the main reason, is the ability to change tunings without everything just getting totally screwed up and having to adjust your neck every, you know, 2 months.
Actually, I saw Adrian Legg play years and years ago, back when I started playing guitar, probably the early 90s I would have seen him. And mm-hmm. when he plays, he actually has, he's got an Ovation, I'm not sure which model.
He's got those banjo tuners on him.
Because he uses them all the time to change tunings while he's playing, and I was just sort of mesmerized.
The banjo tuner is sort of designed to, like, you know, to just drop you right to where you're supposed to be. And yeah, that's what he's doing. He's so cool.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. But yeah, he always has that nice deep sound from his guitar. So I guess it's sort of, you're following in that sort of tradition of using the carbon fiber to enhance the acoustic properties, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. You know, and the guy that I really, you know, the one guy that I like kind of like cop, like stole from outright, is Preston Reed, and like his tuning's just, it's crazy. He plays a baritone Adamus guitar, and he is down so low, and it sounds so good.
It's almost like you've got an orchestra behind you when you hear those low notes. It's sort of like a, you know, a cello just vibrating underneath the music. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, a lot going on, you know, and I know that people are like, boo, plastic guitars, boo. Like, do not knock it till you try it. And there's not a single guitar player that I've put that guitar in their arms, they've gone like, wow. Everyone thinks that, I mean, that guitar is something special.
And is that unplugged as well? You're happy with the unplugged sound as much as the...
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, the sound on the record, we don't, you know, we only plug in for like a reference. So the sound on the record is all mic'd.
Oh, cool. The video for that you just posted for No True Masterpiece Will Ever Be Complete, there was a guitar you're playing there. It looks like it's got a mirrored fretboard.
Yeah, we just stuck some... We just stuck some fucking, you know, reflective paper on there.
I was thinking, wow, they've like got some glass fretboard going on here.
Yeah. No, I should tell people that. I should say, yeah, I got a guitar with a mirror fretboard. No, it was just a reflective material we found. But it's cool, you know, it's neat sort of having that, you know, I've never seen that perspective of the fingers on the fretboard. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it looks amazing in the video. Very cool.
Thanks.
So to wrap up, I know you're very busy, so I just wanted to ask you, if guitarists out there listening want to learn to play either your tunes, like your tracks, or your style of playing, especially the sort of percussive two-hand kind of style, have you got any tips or any advice for them starting out?
Well, you know, really the you know, getting out of standard tuning is sort of the first thing. Standard tuning tends to be very... It's a pretty, you know, there's a lot of tension and that can really be hard because you're like, I want to do this. And you're like, it literally feels physically impossible. And the truth is it is, you know, so getting out of the idea that your guitar has to be tuned to certain notes is sort of invaluable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, patience and a willingness to experiment and, yeah. Playing the drums, probably.
Yeah, so you work on your rhythmic.
Yeah, the rhythmic stuff and the you know, alternating hands. I mean, the truth is any sort of two-hand technique is a combination of the left hand doing something extremely simple, the right hand doing something extremely simple, and you just intertwine the two like you would notes on a snare drum. You know, it's really not much more difficult than that. The trick is intertwining, you know, and yeah. I think that being a drummer has helped me do that with relative ease. And I think any piano player would do it very, very simply. Mm. But I think that that's kind of the real thing to remember is that nothing has to be, it all looks and sounds incredibly complicated, but guarantee you broken down, it is extremely simple at its core.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much, Kirky, for joining me today.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Good luck with the album Glow that's out now and the tour as well.
All right. Cool. Have a good one. Thanks for the interview.
Well, that brings us to the end of the podcast. And before I go, if you want to catch Kaki King while she's on her 2013 Glow Tour in Australia, head up to the Brisbane Powerhouse on May the 11th, Mullumbimby Civic Hall on May the 12th, Darwin Old Town Hall Ruins on May the 16th, the Tank Arts Centre in Cairns on May 18th, the Basement in Sydney on May 19th, May 22nd, Clarendon Guesthouse in Katoomba, Heritage Hotel on May 23rd in Bulleye, Lizotte's DY in Sydney on May 24th, Lizotte's Kincumber on the 25th, Lizotte's Newcastle on the 26th, the Corner Hotel in Richmond on May 30th, the Governor Hindmarsh on May 31st, the Bakery in Perth on June the 1st, and then she flies all the way back from Perth to Sydney to play the Vanguard on June 2nd. Thanks for listening, and remember you can follow Guitar Noise on Twitter at Guitar Noise, also on Facebook, facebook.com/guitarnoise. You can also find Guitar Noise on Google+, and of course at the website guitarnoise.com. And remember, it's Guitar Noise with a Z.